We now come to the Theatre Voice specific categories, which are Thrill of the Year, Nadir of the Year, and everybody's special award. So let's go for the Thrill of the Year. This could be anything. I've asked all my panellists to come up with a moment, a scene, a performance, something that genuinely thrilled them, which we all go to the theatre hoping we will get on a nightly basis, don't always manage it. So, why don't we start with Matt?
Well, I was thinking of the moment of the curtain call of the History Boys on the press night, which, as Charlie was saying, was delayed an hour, and so there was a real sense of anxiety, and would we all be out in time? And yet, when the eight boys came out for their bow, and it was just so moving to see these eight young actors, most of whom we'd never heard of before, and you felt as if this is the next generation of British talent right there on one stage at one time. But I'm actually going to choose the scenic coup de théâtre with which Michael Greenwich's production of Suddenly Last Summer ended. This is a play set in a hothouse, which in this production looks as if, you know, there's a Venus flytrap that's going to sort of suck all the characters up. And then at the very, very end of the play, within this sort of cylindrical drum with which the action is unfolded, after Victoria Hamilton's mesmerizing Catherine has delivered her final soliloquy, the play just, the set just snaps shut, devouring all the characters within it, and it literally made everyone gasp.
A moment of high theatre, then. What about you, Alistair?
Mine's partly a personal thrill, private thrill, so to speak, which I'm going to turn on and make it public. We've talked about seeing plays again. I went to see All's Well That Ends Well 4 times. With Judi Dench's extraordinary performance as the Countess. And one of them, I stood in line with a friend because it was the only way we could get tickets. It was a Saturday matinee. And a friend was in the cast and went back to the cast and said, "Guess who's in the line?" And I just forgot about, you know, saying hello to this member of the cast. What I did see was a performance that, particularly from Judi Dench, had new inflections. Extraordinary little gestures, like when she's with Helena at the end, just putting her hand on her pregnant daughter-in-law's stomach and feeling it in a new way. And the way she just listens in silence for that long scene with everybody else telling one layer of the plot and her going to a new layer of grief because it's her son who is just disintegrating in moral integrity before her very eyes. And I was thinking, God, how amazing that Judi Dench, approaching 70, finds new things in a performance 3 weeks down the line, or how many months down the line. And I happened to get a letter from Thelma Holt 2 days later saying, the cast was so thrilled to find you were in the line, and just as the curtain's about to go up, the word got to Judi Dench, and she said, "Fine, let's do it for him then."
Wow.
So, other personal moments of thrilldom. Jane?
Well, it's a very bleak thrill, but I suppose it tuned into my horrors of ever being in a situation where you were called upon to be brave in any way. And it was in Macbeth at the Arcola, if you remember, after the death of Lady Macduff. In this production, Macbeth sort of turned up, and Ross was there, and there was a sound of a crying baby. Off stage, and Ross was effectively given the choice of either going and killing this baby or that he would be executed himself. And the actor sat there, and then the noise of the baby, you know, was going on in the background. And then he got up and walked off, and there was no more sound of the baby. And that certainly got me.
That's a moment of absence, and my Thrill of the Year was also another strange moment of absence, because it was something that I didn't see. I was actually physically there. It was the moment in Roger Michell's absolutely extraordinary production of Old Times at the Donmar Warehouse. He set the entire production within a gauze, which is the sort of thing that normally drives me up the wall, because you just go, this is to show me how distancing it is, and I just feel disconnected from the actors. It was so brilliantly designed and lit by Rick Fisher and designed by William Dudley that you never felt that detachment from the actors. And across the back wall, there was a black and white projection of a sea view from the back of the house. And at some point in the play, that disappeared, and it was just a mirror, and I didn't see it go. And I doubt whether anybody saw it go, but actually at some point I suddenly thought, whoa, that's change than I did in The Hat, because I am so glued to the action. It's always been one of my favourite plays, and I've never seen it done better, and that moment, as I say, of absence completely did it for me. What about you, Mark?
Oh, well, after all these moments of high art, I'm opting for a moment of extremely low art. I was thrilled when Seb Barbican won the Olivier Award for Best Entertainment this year, partly because of what this show represented. Where most people at the Olivier Awards didn't actually know, hadn't seen the show and didn't know what it contained. It's a cabaret in which you order acts to your table. It's a table-side cabaret. One of the ones, I don't think I'll ever forget, an act called Boogaloo Stew Wanks for You, which involves a man with a very with a giant ejaculating dildo that basically does what it says on the label. And this one in the Olivier Award, I think it was an absolutely magnificent moment.
Charlie, are you in the same league?
No, mine's a very innocent one after that. It's a rather sentimental one, I'm afraid. It was taking my son to see the Mary Poppins, because this film we must have watched together about 30 times on the video. It was particularly a film that we always used to watch together when he was not very well, and so it's got very fond memories for me. And it was seeing my son's excitement. He just loved walking. I mean, I hate first nights, and it was a particularly crowded and annoying kind of first night. And yet, Edward, we had to walk round this along this great big red carpet, and he saw the photographers and the autograph hunters there, and he was absolutely loved every minute of it. And I suddenly thought, actually, you know, you can get very hardened in this job, and actually, it is a kind of privilege to be at the birth of these shows. And he was thrilled by the show. And there's just one moment in the show where Bert just walks up the proscenium, walks up a wall horizontally underneath, does a tap dance hanging upside down from the proscenium arch, and then calmly walks down the other side, which I think is what theatre's all about, really.
Great. Okay, so from high points, let's go to the nadirs of the year. This is a year that has had more than its fair share of disasters. Chief among them, probably the Might Read Oscar Wilde musical opening closed on one night. Jane, what was your the moment you wish you hadn't sat through?
Well, there's a team of us at Time Out, and I am actually quite canny about these musicals. Well, you don't really have to be very canny, do you? In quite a lot of cases, you know very well they're going to be great. So I've missed an awful lot of the catastrophic West Enders. But perhaps more in the case of being overrated, I did think that the Robert Wilson, The Black Rider, was very disappointing and very... that the actors just had no freedom in it, that they felt like puppets and felt very dehumanised. So in spite of all those talents, and I'm a great fan of Tom Waits, that I felt this was a mechanical exercise, and I got no joy out of seeing it at all.
And I would only second that. I didn't see the production, but one of the most extraordinary moments of the entire year was watching the curtain call for the other Robert Wilson show that was on at Sabbath, as well as The Temptation of St. Anthony, which is a gospel show. The entire company came on at the end, and they were all swaying absolutely in time. So there's an entire company leaning, you know, moving from left to right in the rhythm of the music. And then Robert Wilson came on to take his bow and proceeded to move in a different rhythm to everybody else. And I suddenly thought, he can't hear rhythm. That's why everybody moves so weirdly in Robert Wilson productions. So, Alistair, you famously didn't stay for the second half of The Black Rider. But I suspect that's not your nadir of the year.
It's not my nadir of the year. Mine is... I am filled with shame, won't you help me build the bridge I set aflame? And lines like, I know that I've wronged you and that I can't defend. I hope I haven't learnt too late that you're my one true friend. It is, of course, The Woman in White. There's worse than that. The great love refrain that comes round sickeningly often is, I believe in you, I believe my heart. The portrait that it paints of you is a perfect work of art.
Don't forget it's Don Black.
I know.
I
know, but you know what?
No, it's David Zippel.
Oh, it's not Don Black.
Actually, another composer wouldn't have made those so tiresome. The awful thing is the way that Lloyd Webber takes those lyrics and hammers them in as if into a coffin.
But the trouble is he doesn't. The trouble is that he writes the music first and then forces the songwriters, the lyric writers, to fit stuff to his
music.
Well,
they all should burn in hell. I sat there cringing for the West End.
Lyrics also were not at their strongest in your nadir of the year, Matt.
Yes, I'm sorry to say Charlie invoked Don Black in the case of Woman in White, which isn't true, but Don Black, I'm afraid, did figure all too horrifically in my nadir of the year, which was the Almeidas production of Brighton Rock. This is a musical that Bill Kenwright, the producer, has been wanting to bring to the West End, I'm told, for the better part of 20 or 30 years, and so this was his great obsession. I'm beginning to think, and in movies one can sort of find a parallel with Kevin Spacey's ludicrous film about Bobby Darin, that people's sort of lifelong obsession should be just sort of put to one side.
Yeah, you've waited that long as a reason.
It just misfired in every way, most spectacularly. The first musical the Almeidas ever done, and if this is anything to go by, probably the last. And what was particularly sad about it was that it had a link, of course, to the original film of Brighton Rock, which starred Richard Attenborough as the young psychopath Pinky, and this production was directed by Lord Attenborough's son Michael, and that was supposed to give it a kind of legitimacy and you know, historical connection, and actually it just made the whole thing that much more painful. But the most surreal aspect of it was watching a young leading actor, Michael Gibson, who looked exactly like Macaulay Culkin.
No. Not necessarily a fate I'd wish on anybody.
No. I'm told that Bill Kenwright is still holding on to that obsession and is now, even now, planning on a new version of that.
To star Kevin Spacey.
let's please move swiftly on from that, Mark.
Well, of course, there have been lots and lots of candidates. I mean, we have mentioned Fuddy Me as the debut production of the Carrie Newling and Sam Mendes company, or any number of plays at Hampstead Theatre, The Earthly Paradise, that put everyone, including Risa fans, to sleep on breast night. I'm actually going to choose two events that, I'm going to actually choose an event that is actually being predicted for next year, which is Acorn Antiques is opening in the new year with a new £65 top price, which I think is completely unconscionable. I mean, the breast and plicker prices have been going up steadily, and they're now sort of £50 roughly for a musical. £65 is the next big hike, and actually makes a West End theatre ticket price more expensive than the current Broadway top. For the first time in history.
Gosh.
Not good. Charlie, you and I share our nadir of the year. You go first.
Well, it was Imogen Stubbs' play, We Happy Few, which struck me as being the absolute epitome of everything you hate about the acting profession. It was about this gallant little troupe of women performing Shakespeare around the country in the dark days of the Second World War. And it was just like a great bumper compendium of every lovely cliche you've ever heard. And the whole thing about it was absolutely ghastly. And what I found particularly vexing about this was that this play would never have reached any stage at all had she not been married to Trevor Nunn, who consented to direct it. And I think the whole thing was one of the worst examples of nepotism I've ever seen. And I went with a friend of mine who promptly nicknamed We Happy Few, We Crappy Crew, and that just about summed it up, actually. Ghastly, ghastly. Put you off the theatre, really. It was meant to celebrate the theatre, and actually what it did is put you right off it.
I mean, it was extraordinary thinking, this woman left Oxford in 1982 with a first-class degree in English literature. What happened? Well, what happened is that she spent a lot of time working in theatre, and yet managed to write a play in which poor Caroline Blakiston, an extremely fine actor, was reduced to stepping forward for her one-line scene in which she gives her Shakespeare audition and says, "Would you like to see my bottom?" A joke that could surface on Antiques Roadshow. Yes, I think we should draw a veil over that and all the other hideousnesses which we saw so that you didn't have to. So let's end on a high. Let's go out on people's personal awards. This can be an award for a body of work. It can be for, you know, marvellous things that happened to people, or anything that you choose. So let's kick off with you, Matt. What's your...
Well, one of the reasons we go to the theatre, I hope, is to be surprised. And I was enormously surprised twice this year by an actor of whom I had thought not much of anything, really, in recent years. It wasn't that I didn't like him, I just thought, well, so what? And this was Lee Evans, who was astonishing first in Beckett, in the revival of Endgame, opposite Michael Gambon, and then particularly in The Producers, of course, playing Bloom opposite Nathan Lane's Bialystock. And what was remarkable, of course, in Beckett was that he was immensely funny, as you would expect, and this is, after all, the player who said nothing is funnier than unhappiness. But Lee Evans tapped into the unhappiness as well, in addition to being physically beyond compare, some of the maneuvers that he had to do in that part. Coming to the Mel Brooks musical, he brought the one thing I didn't think that show had, which was a heart. When I had seen it on Broadway, I was sort of put off slightly by Matthew Broderick's smarminess. And Lee Evans has a kind of preternatural innocence, which is immensely affecting, and against all the odds, actually cried. And I thought, my God, I'm shedding tears at the producers. They must be doing something right.
Whether this person was doing something right or wrong, I'm not sure. Tell us about your special award, Mark.
I'm choosing, for self-sabotage and the apparent pursuit of publicity, I'm choosing Nicola McAuliffe, who documented the tortuous route of murderous instincts to the West End in a series of articles. In fact, during the summer, she also spent a brief stint as the theatre critic of the Daily Mail. And the only thing to be said for her returning to acting is that at least she didn't have to sit through the show that was Murderous Instincts. But I mean, it was an amazing story, the backstage story behind Murderous Instincts. I mean, it ran 9 nights, which was 1 night longer than it had directors along the way. And one of the many directors it had was Michael Rooney, who's Mickey Rooney's son. Unfortunately, he arrived in England without a work permit, so had to go to Paris to apply for one, and was apparently phoning in his direction from there. Now, actors are often accused derogatorily of phoning in their performances, but this is the first time that a director has ever literally done so. But in fact, when the show finally did open, it opened without a director credited at all, which is even more amazing.
Speaking of directors, that leads us neatly into Jane's choice for the Jane
My
Edwards
choice.
Award.
The Jane Edwards Award, I think this year goes to, we go to Out of Joint. We haven't really discussed some of the themes of the year. One of them has been these documentary plays. And I thought what the most powerful was The Permanent Way, which looked into the crashes that have occurred on British Rail, but really was about grief and about people's reactions to being involved, either losing people or being suffering injuries, and these great descriptions about what they were going through and their courage in fighting the bureaucracy that was so eager to dismiss them, I thought was extremely moving and powerful. And it's a surprising company, Out of Joint. You never quite know what they were going to do next. And then they turned up with a promenade Macbeth at the Arcola Theatre, which had an intimacy about it, particularly in the scenes between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. But it was also exciting in the sense that it was given this African setting, which brought you really close to the tyranny and brutality of dictatorships and made the play feel very modern and very brought it home.
Alistair, your watching brief is not solely theatre.
No.
So where have you taken your thrill from?
My award goes to two dead people. It's the centenary of the births of Frederick Ashton and George Balanchine. Their works have been revived, particularly by the Royal Ballet, and watching them, I realised, of course, these aren't just choreographers that I care about as dance. I realised these are great makers of dance drama and some of the greatest makers of theatre of our time. Actually, with Balanchine, I really think he is the greatest modernist theatre artist of the 20th century, full stop, above Beckett, above Brecht, above Binder. I have to put Ashton with him because he is the local man, and the Royal Ballet is doing a whole fest of Ashton, and the Royal Ballet is dancing them, thank God, in good form again. It does all my spare nights of rushing to see the Ashton Ballets at the moment.
Well, it is great to see the work of those two being celebrated, and actually if theatre goers need their brains rewiring, go and watch companies performing work as strong as that, as well as they currently are, really does make you look at stage space entirely differently, which I've just realised segues me neatly into my award of the year, which goes to a much overlooked category, the lighting designer. Paulie Constable, I think, is there's a very wide field of very, very good lighting designers in this country. Rick Fisher, Hugh Vanston, all sorts of designers are good, but I do think that Paulie Constable's work Well, Paula Constance's work on Don Carlos actually made me laugh rather inappropriately. I mean, there are times when you're presented by work that is so beautiful, you kind of don't know what to do with it. I remember having that feeling at the William Nicholson show at the Royal Academy. There's one painting there that I literally started laughing at because I couldn't believe how extraordinary it was. And there's a scene in Don Carlos where a wall of a prison is flown in onto the crucible stage, and it has a prison doorway, it has a grill in the door, and white light. Constable usually works with white light as opposed to throwing colour in order to get drama. She uses very directional light, and this light spills through the door and hits the floor, at which point you see Don Carlos, Richard Coyle, lying on the floor, and the light appears to scald his body. Every single lighting state that she conjures up not only illuminates, obviously, the stage space, but it controls the mood, the tone, and the rhythm of the play. It's fantastic work, and her work in the Opera House this year has been really outstanding. Very, very exciting theatre artist. Which leaves us, I think, with just one more to go. Charlie.
Yes, this is a very unfashionable choice, I think, but I want to give it to Michael Boyd at the Royal Shakespeare Company. He inherited this company, left it in an abysmal mess by Adrian Noble, whose departure from the company, I think, was probably the most... the timing of it was one of the most scandalous things I think I've ever come across in 25 years of covering the arts. He left the company the day after, or announced he was leaving the company the day after the reviews of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang ensured that he'd be a millionaire. And Michael Boyd got the short straw of taking up this company that was on its knees. And it's been painful at times, and it hasn't all worked. But he's got a kind of dour doggedness about him that I very much admire. A classic example of this was Hamlet in Stratford. I thought was pretty disappointing, and he'd done so much work on it by the time he came to London. He apparently never stopped rehearsing it. He had this very good season of the Spanish Golden Age plays, and it looked as though they wouldn't be coming to London, but finally they've managed it. It's still a company in trouble, but you do feel that if anyone's going to give it its best possible chance, it's Boyd, who's got this sort of stubborn resilience about him, and I think he deserves to be honoured for that.
Yeah, I agree.
And hear from the crew. The good thing about a lot of those choices is that, as I look down this list, I would say about 80% of them, I may have got my maths wrong, but 80% of them are still running. You may not wish to have listened to, say, the review of The Woman in White and immediately book tickets, but you can still book tickets for Feston and for Mary Poppins and the History Boys and all sorts of other things. So I hope that listeners will be filling up their 2005 with our suggestions, and I hope that looking over the year between ourselves has made us hopeful for what we might go and see in 2005. So I would just like to end up by thanking Jane Edwards, Alistair McCauley, Matt Wolfe, Mark Shenton, and Charlie Spence, and myself, David Benedict. Thank you.